Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Anime. Today we have a fabulous new horror film called Alive. It was made in 2018, didn't come out for a couple of years, so we're going to find out why today. I think that's something important. I have Camille Stops, I have Chuck McCure, and Jules Vincent.
Got it.
All right, I got them all right today. So let's start at the beginning. Why did it take 2 years for your film to come out?
You want to handle that, Chuck?
Well, first we were doing the genre festival run, which ran through the end of 2019 pretty much. We were at Fana Posa down in Brazil. We were the audience favorite there. And then, we went into the, we had a distributor deal on the table. I'll be quite honest with you, we didn't really like it. Jules and I were also the producers of this. And, it was a gut-wrenching decision. We pulled off the table on that, went and looked for another distributor, found one that was fabulous. We're with Good Deed and Cranked Up. And then, of course, we had this little, I don't know if anybody's heard about it, but there's this pandemic going around, which is really threw a monkey wrench into things because we were slated for a much earlier release. But, with all the unknowns, it was like, well, do we want to do it now? Maybe we should kick it a little bit. Then it got kicked a little bit. And then, of course, everything you're trying to do on the run-up to actual release, all these different platforms, they have different quality control issues and stuff like that. So everything, even though you think you have everything tidied up, you might have to make a little tweak here, a little tweak there, and everything just became, nothing got done quickly. Everything got kicked. You'd fix something that would take weeks before you would get an okay on it. And part of it was because people just weren't where they physically were. It became difficult to do everything. And, in the long run, we're pretty happy about it because we like coming out this time of year. It's close to Halloween. It's starting to get cooler. People get kind of, gets darker earlier, a little creepier. So in the long run, we didn't mind the little extra, whatever it was, 6 or 8 months delay. We think it probably actually ended up to our benefit. We like to say it's a timeless movie, so we don't need to. The time is not that important to us.
It's true. So how is working with a collaborator, Jules? Like, you both got to write, and how does that work?
It's mostly just yelling. It's just constant yelling. Stuff gets thrown and broken. No,
happened a couple times.
I would say it's two things. There's the, you always have I can't read his mind. He can't read my mind. So we always have competing ideas. And that's not to say that somehow it's a competition to get your stuff on the page, but I think it's actually a challenge. It becomes very like, okay, well, what makes it better all the time? Because, like, there comes a point when you're writing a script where you kind of run out of ideas. So it's harder for two people to run out of ideas. It's harder for two people to run out of ways to fix it or to, add conflict or whatever. So it becomes, maybe it's a little hair pulling out at times if, you don't get your way on things, but I think by and large, everything gets better because of it.
Perfect. Camille, I'm going to you next. I'm going to try to keep you all busy. So
stay with Camille the whole time if I were you. But
no, got to have fun. How's being covered in blood pretty much the whole film?
I'm going to say that was my first film that I had that much blood on me for pretty much the whole film. And I'm a little bit, like, queasy as a person, so it was quite challenging because there were scenes where, especially the one where I'm in all covered in blood, I won't say too much, obviously, but where I was gagging as a human, where I was like, I really don't like this, oh my god, but that's beneficial to being in character and having to live through something, for sure. I also will say that wardrobe really had a huge assist for being covered in blood so much, especially when we moved to outdoor exterior scenes, because the types of different fake blood that you can use in horror films, they vary, and if you're outside, you really need to have a more dive structured thing that I can still sit down in, have lunch, live my life as a human. And that mosquitoes or dirt won't get stuck to and stuff like that. So it definitely pushed a limit in terms of myself and my preference for how much blood I get covered in regularly. But it was exciting. It was a lot of fun. I had fun at the end of the day being covered in blood.
So
I never knew there was so much blood continuity required.
Oh,
you know, getting the same lines of blood drawn on your face in the morning and stuff. It's pretty impressive.
Well, I hate to bring this up. There is one continuity error in the film on blood, but I'm not getting into it. There is one I did notice, but I don't care.
Blood continuity?
It might be the same one that drives Chuck and I crazy.
Yeah, there's one big one. I'm like, that's a mistake. I just laughed at it and let it go. Now, when you both approach a horror film, do you write them differently than you would write a drama, or you'll both start at the same point all the time?
I think it's the same point.
In terms of how to write a horror film as opposed to how to write a comedy or something.
Correct.
I mean, you don't necessarily have to have the great surprise ending at the end of a comedy that horror sort of requires, right? I mean, I guess not all horror has a big hook, but, you know, typically they do. And you got to kind of figure that out before you dive in and start writing. I mean, we kind of had that from the beginning, right, Chuck?
Yeah. I didn't feel like from some of the other stuff we've written that it wasn't. I think our approach was the same on it.
Yelling and throwing things.
Perfect.
Yeah. But I mean, what's fun about, you know, horror is you can really be, you know, go crazy with it. You know, you can really, you can stretch. I mean, maybe that's what you're really, I do think you can approach some of the confines are opened up because you don't have to, you know, obviously if you've got a, you know, somebody's life story or a true life story, there are going to be certain confines of, you know, what happens. This is a, you can suspend belief a little bit more, right? And you can do crazier things. So yeah, I mean, in that way, it's different, definitely.
Okay, Camille, we're going back to you. You have to eat some interesting food one point on set. It's kind of shoved into your mouth, if I'll try to give you that. That'll help you out a bit more. What did it really taste like?
Oh, what? Do you want to know what that really was? It was like an oatmeal,
that one,
like porridge. It was super, super gluey, though. Like, not enough water in there. But I felt like I was getting some good fiber for the day.
So
it wasn't bad tasting. It was like oatmeal and but you know, not very sweet, I'm gonna say. And yeah, lots of fiber.
Didn't Bobby, our set designer, I believe Bobby may have sabotaged Tom's.
You're right. Mine was not nearly as bad as Tom's. If Tom was on here, he'd be like, "Oh, that was disgusting." His was really bitter. I don't know what spices that Bobby put into that. Yeah, but Tom's was significantly more gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't he combine like oatmeal with meat, which is not a combo typically has. Nobody eats ground beef with their oatmeal in the morning.
No, his was pretty gross. I didn't want to have his. But also, I mean, that speaks to the treatment of the two, the woman and the man in the movie.
Mm.
We both are treated a little differently by dear Angus, so... Naturally, I'd get a better oatmeal.
That's true. He would give you a better oatmeal. I agree.
Yeah.
When you guys are writing your script, did you know it was going to be that location, or did you have the location in mind ahead of time, or was that found after the script was written?
Well, it was definitely found after. Well, yeah, that location was found after the script was written, but it was very true to what was written in the script.
Yeah, the whole thing was based around an abandoned hospital, so we just needed to find an abandoned hospital. The only thing that we lost, that the location couldn't match to the script, we had a rooftop scene in the script that we could not accomplish because of the regulations of the Calgary. I don't remember if it was the Alberta province or Calgary. We weren't allowed to get out on the roof. So
I think it was because it was such an old building.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why.
Yeah, they wouldn't let us on the roof.
Yeah.
So we did a rewrite, and that's where the garden scene comes from.
That's what I was getting.
Yeah. Right.
Which didn't hurt the film at all. I mean, it didn't have to be a roof scene there. You're not missing anything.
No, I mean, I suppose the only thing that I would say I wish that we could have been on the roof for was part of their, when they're going through the hospital, looking for an exit. The roof came into play there as well, and we just didn't have a way to accomplish that. So, but that's low budget filmmaking too. You know, I mean, we could have been able to be on a roof, but maybe the city would require some kind of crazy security or, you know, stuff that we couldn't have afforded, or maybe if we're in a different location that we couldn't afford. So you have to make those adjustments no matter what.
Absolutely. Now, Camille, you were painted up, you are bandaged up. How is getting prep for all that every day when you go on to set?
I'm going to say certain mornings, Tom and I were a little reluctant to get to Ashley, to our makeup woman. But I was probably better than Tom at just getting myself into her chair. But makeup and getting into character, that part of the day is a bit of a ritual for me. As an actor, like, especially when you're working on a film that requires such heightened circumstance, you need a little bit of time to ease into things. And so that was a really nice time of day for us where, like, you shot a long day the night before, and you passed out all night, you're up in the morning, you're back on set, and it's going to be another long day. And you get to kind of wake up together, get processed, start dipping your brain into what are we shooting today, let me look over these scenes, let me get into the character, and you get a nice ease in. It becomes part of the ritual of the filmmaking for the actor, the process of getting ready and kind of getting into things. Happens every day for me because I'm not going to sing that character all shoot. I mean, the hotel might have been a little scared. Yeah, so it was a really nice part of the day. It's taxing because some days you're like, I don't want to have blood all over my face, and then you just do it and you begin.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys are writing a horror script, do you guys think in your head how much blood you want on the actor and what clothes you want the actors to wear? Obviously, you're not in the script. I mean, low budget, you may be even in costume design. Do you think more blood is better sometimes, or do you guys, when you're on set, go, maybe not, we didn't quite see it that way, we see it this way? What direction do you give the director?
Do you guys remember, did you want when I looked like Rambo? We were joking that first day I came out of school blood, and we were like, is it too much blood or is it enough?
Yeah, that was shocking, but I think you'd already shot it out, so there wasn't much we could do about it.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So I would say that I would credit Rob Grant for pushing the envelope on that. He really, he took what we had in the script, and obviously, you know, you describe the blood, but you don't necessarily describe, like, the elevator from The Shining level of blood that he went for. I think there are plenty of times where it's quite shocking, and, I think horror audiences like stuff like that. They can, especially if it comes with a purpose, right? It's not like we're just...
Yeah, it's not gratuitous.
Yeah, we're not just savagely cutting someone open and letting the blood flow out, right? I mean, it's got part of the story to it.
Yeah.
So, Camille, there's a question for you. Have your parents seen the film?
Yes. Can I...
Awesome.
the blood, too. I like the amount of blood that got used because there's a consequence to action. And I think it's important for us as people, as humans, to see films and see consequence. Like, that somebody is losing that amount of blood, or it is all over you. Like, there is psychological consequences for my character in being immersed in that much blood, but then consequences, violence, and what does that mean? So, I don't know. There's some things in there, too. But,
well, that's true. Yeah.
My
parents, they have seen the film. My mom, the last horror film she would have watched was Jaws, which she's still psychologically scarred from. I kind of took...
Her surfing days were over after that.
Yeah, it's hard. So I had to explain to her every detail of what was going to happen so that she'd be able to sit through it and kind of sit beside her and be like, I'm right here. I'm alive. It's okay.
I was just going to ask about a sponge bath scene and also the scene where you get hit in the face with an object.
Sure. What do you want to ask about them?
Well, how did your parents react to those? I mean, you're a child. Sure. And, I mean, get a guy giving you a sponge bath, they probably think that's a little strange, getting hit in the face with something. But maybe you've already told your mom ahead of time they were coming.
Oh, well, you know what? I didn't tell her that there was a sponge bath coming. I think that what the scene serves and is it important to the story. So those kinds of things, like it pushes the envelopes of what is creepy, right? But how he's taking care of her. And we're, as the audience, you're seeing this from a certain perspective, like she's a victim of this man, but, you know, that's your reality. That's what you're watching as it unfolds. And so we see it through that lens, and it's important for us to see that scene because it contributes to them being on my side as a woman trying to figure out who I am, why I'm here, and escaping. So I think that the scene, my parents didn't mind watching that scene. They were, you know, they were just the same as any other audience member sitting there going, why is he doing this to her? What is this? And that scene was important. It is important to the film, as you'll see in the end. So, yeah, to kind of help with that perspective and how the audience is viewing it.
So back to the writer. How do you guys feel about line reads? Do you let your actors change lines, or sometimes you say, nope, we need that line for something later?
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
We'll take that first.
Are you talking about just if they improv or
yes,
if they aren't saying it like we thought they'd say it when we wrote it?
I have both questions, I think, work. You can take whichever one you want.
I think all three of the actors did a lot of improvisation, and a lot of it made the film. And I don't have a problem with really any of it. There are a few things that probably they read that we didn't realize that, like, we didn't have it in there. Or when we wrote it, we thought, oh, they're going to read this like this. But then somebody reading it sees it a different way. So there are, you know, there's a handful of times where maybe our intention and the actor's intentions don't match, but they still work in the film. I mean, as much of a control freak as I am, I can't make them do it exactly like I thought they'd do it to start with. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. But they're all great actors. That's their job. They did a great job at it.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think I think there were a couple lines that we had talked about, we'd written, and the actors had maybe a different interpretation in where you're like patting ourselves on the back about what a good line that was. Oh, yeah. Look, because they made it better, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's all part of the, I mean, we look at the script as like the seed, right? It's all a creative process. Everybody brings, you know, stuff into it. I mean, everybody brings stuff into it. The actors, the director, the makeup, the set people. I mean, everybody on this shoot was so fantastic, and everybody, now I'm blanking on his name, but we had one set decorator who was getting that that hospital ready, he'd come in at midnight and work through till like 8 o'clock in the morning playing really scary music the whole time. And you could see it. I mean, you could literally see it in the set design. You're like, wow, this feels really scary. Somebody really worked, you know, their butt off to make sure it looks scary.
That was Tim.
Yeah.
Bobby Van Owen was our production designer. Tim was his number one guy. And I don't remember what title we gave him, but Tim was great. Bobby was great. They made the place. I mean, the place was creepy to begin with because it was an abandoned hospital and they had problems with, like, you know, people using it as a flop house at times and stuff like that. Like, the city had to come and make sure that there were no vagrants there before we started shooting. So it looked weird and it looked run down, and then they made it look just nightmarish afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh. If I can add to what you asked too, you guys, Chuck and Jules were, I think, pretty incredible in terms of being open to collaboration and thoughts from actors. Not all scripts or productions are open to that the way you guys were. You helped us kind of be able to make it ours and to be able to then, I'm going to say, play it more truthfully at the end of the day. When you can contribute and you feel like there's a dialogue instead of just a one-way street, then it lets everybody kind of work through something better. And I think that's to your credit that we were able to do that and that you were okay with it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Also, I had an improv, probably some of that stuff, because I think I came on like 3 days before we went to camera. So I was like learning scenes the night before, being like, what is this? And relying on Rob to say, what point in the arc are we? Do you need me to be like full on crying, or am I like just testing things out here? So there was, it was like necessary collaboration, which was really, really lovely. Yeah.
That's true. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. You landed and basically it was ready, get ready to shoot. We're a day away or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think was, ended up helping probably our process. But
Okay, Camille, yeah. Back to you. You have a couple of scenes where you do a little bit of running. You have a couple of scenes where you do a little bit of running? Were you prepared for those? Like, that was a healthy run both times.
Running, yeah. You know what? Got some good cardio. I'm going to say that this film, I have the best sleeps of my life at that hotel, and it's because of living in such heightened circumstance and like physically really being in it. When your body is invested, your body doesn't know that you're acting. Your body thinks it's real. So like your heart rate's up and your adrenaline's pumping and you're sweating and you're out of breath. And Tom used to scare the living crap out of me before we would do those running scenes. So it really all contributed to that. Yeah, I'm running a lot. It's fun. I love the running.
Didn't you guys get some, like, seriously bruised feet running on those? Because it was gravel, right?
Yeah, and then the inside of the hospital, because we're in bare feet the whole time. Yeah. We don't have shoes and we're running. And it is an abandoned hospital, so, the team, though, was really good at making sure we had a clear pathway and the nails were gone and no one was getting tetanus or, you know, that was all very safe and we were taken care of. But the outside of it, Sheep River, that was challenging on the good old feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Outdoor pine needles, rocks, you're running down the gravel and, yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm a dancer, so I have some good callus probably on my feet that takes care of that. And our wonderful wardrobe helped wrap them up, and they really gave us, like, nude extra second skin via tape and moleskin and a lot of really good wrapping. So that all helped a lot.
Back to the writers. When you guys write something, do you have music in mind or have a composer you always work with, or are you just like, nope, I'll leave it up to the director to put that together for me?
In this case, you know, we probably left it really more to, I mean, we understand when we're writing that there's, you know, peaks and valleys and that, but I personally don't do the music in my head. I don't know what Jules does, but I certainly don't.
Well, we have that ongoing joke about this is the moment that Pete Frampton's Let My Love Open the Door. Do I have that right? Is that Pete Frampton? But that really Pete only applies it. To rom-coms. It's yeah, hard to fit that into a horror.
Yeah, that's Pete Townsend.
Oh, Pete Townsend, sorry, not Pete Frampton. Pete
Frampton. I think that could be really cool in a horror film, just saying. I don't know. I wonder if Tarantino puts any of those score or the song references in advance. I don't know.
He does.
I think he does.
Okay.
I think Scorsese, although obviously I don't think Martin Scorsese writes most of his stuff, but I think he puts it all in as he writes, as he's like reading the script and stuff. He knows what songs he wants. I've heard that. I don't know.
I agree. But, I've heard that too.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we mostly just talked about, you know, atmospheric, ambient kind of, creepy music, right? Like Rob researched. There's a couple of different keys apparently of sound. I don't know, they're high up on the. I don't know anything about music, so they're high. I guess apparently they've done studies and it makes people feel uncomfortable if they have to listen to it for an extended period of time. So he intended to. They're in there at places where there's these notes that are meant to kind of make your hair go up on the back of your neck and your skin crawl.
Maybe dissonance is the term you're looking for?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like off. It's not pleasing to your ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably exactly that. Yeah. So Rob researched that, and then he brought in the composer. It was somebody he'd worked with before. They put it together and then we did the post sound with the, I think their Emmy award winning place in Calgary. They were great. So it all comes together at the end with the score and then the sound.
So back to Camille, I just have one last question for you. You have a scene where you have to run up a bunch of stairs. Again, running upstairs. You're always running in this film. And I would argue this stairs was really caked in blood, like looked like liquid blood. How many times did you have to film that scene?
You know what? You guys were really good at making us not do that too many times. That blood on those stairs started to get really sticky. And so the bottoms of my feet were starting to, like, peel off on the stairs, which you're running, and it was like, I don't know how you did the sound on some of that, because those stairs were so sticky. It looked liquidy and slippery, and it was at first, and then it just got really, really sticky. So we did it I don't know how many times we shot that, but we would have done a couple takes, and then we were probably like, no, my feet are really sticking to this. Do we have it? Is that enough? Are we good?
Okay. This may be a bit of a spoiler, but you can yell at me if I spoil and I'll cut it. You have not one, but two bonus scenes. And I want people to know that when they're watching the film, there's two bonus scenes. So there's one you have to wait for and then another one later. Was that always the plan to have two to see who would stay at the very end? Is that something you always do for a film?
Go ahead, Chuck. The second bonus was the brainchild of Rob for the director. He wanted, I don't really want to give it away, but yes, the bonus, the way we had it written, correct me if I'm wrong about this, Jules.
Oh, I will.
But yeah, I know you. The bonus in this script was not necessarily as a bonus.
Right. It came together as a post-credit just through the edit. In the script, it was not intended to be. I don't know how you would write that into a script and have somebody who's reading it not do, like, an eye roll. Like, oh, really? The credits roll? So now we're going to take your script and make it a movie already, buddy? Like, readers don't read it like that.
Yeah,
readers read that and think, well, that guy's an idiot. Right. So it just came together in the edit. that way.
Yeah, and it really, really worked nice. And then the extra bonus was that robbed it that.
Yeah, and going back to improvisation, I think that was...
That was an improv.
Yeah, that was Angus's little joke, too, right? Angus is quite the live wire, both in the movie and in person.
Yeah, he is.
Angus
gosh.
He's fabulous. And he's fabulous in this.
Yeah.
Okay, Camille, this is your last question before fun questions. When you read a script, do you have a character voice in mind? Do you already know what that character is going to do? Or do you spend a few days thinking about it after you read it?
I'm going to say there's a real fine line for when I read a script. Your first read of the script is so important. You don't want to be doing it like on a plane on your phone. Like, I really want to sit down, block out a chunk of time, and read it through without any weird breaks or phone calls or making a bunch of food or whatever I'd have to do. And yeah, usually there's a lot of like really delicate like feelings that you get that you're trying to kind of pinpoint in your body, because your first read is so fresh, everything's new. So I always try to take a bunch of notes at like first instincts and impulses and like what am I feeling from it. I'm going to say that a lot of this film had to be like that. I wasn't able to overanalyze it because I just didn't have the time to think too deeply in terms of intellect, like just purely mind, overanalyzing, what am I going to do with this character? I had to just jump into it. And a lot of it I had to look at as, what if I was in this situation, Meek Mill, what would this be like? And then you're using your imagination a lot because they're elevated circumstance and they're very extreme and you're living in situations where us as regular humans would never be in. I wouldn't be in any of the situations I would hope that I'm in the film, but you can imagine what it might be like. And I find that that's the most useful tool.
Fair enough. I'm going to move on to fun questions, if that's okay with you guys.
Well,
yeah,
none of those were fun, so.
Yeah, those were all fun. Yeah.
These ones are fun.
They were all a lot of fun.
Because your first time on my show, I need all of your favorite films. So each of you, whoever already want to go in, you can start.
Who's going? Camille saying X?
Camille says no, absolutely not. We'll try. I'm a cinephile here. If you let him start.
I'll say Cool Hand Luke and in a dead heat with the Wild Bunch.
You can come on my show anytime.
Yeah!
Well, I hate to sound too mob-centric, but I think, you know, The Godfather is almost a perfect movie.
It is a perfect movie.
And I love Goodfellas. It's probably my one, too. I don't know. I might go Godfather 1, then Godfather 2, then Goodfellas.
Nothing wrong with those. Nothing.
You know, and it's funny, and the other, my favorite horror movie, of course, of all time is Jaws. So, Camille had mentioned that earlier, so.
Do you know I haven't ever seen Jaws?
Oh, my God.
I'm too scared.
Camille.
I had the opportunity at the drive-in the other night, because it's COVID, so I went to a drive-in. But it was the second feature was going to be Jaws, and I was like, dude's tired.
Oh,
11 p.m.
To see Jaws on the big screen—that is a dream. At a drive-in, that is a dream, Camille.
I am with you.
I was too tired. Well, after this, I've been recovering from a concussion, so I've been like grandma. I'm up at like 7 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm in bed at like 9:30.
So your favorite film is?
How did you get the concussion?
Oh, there you go.
About a year ago, so I'm almost recovered, but it's definitely, you know what, it would have been helpful to come into this film being like, oh, I've had a concussion. I can relate more to my character now than ever before, probably.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must have quite the concussion.
Are we going to get your favorite film?
It was. You want to know favorite films, though, too?
Yes.
I'm a tangent queen with this concussion. I don't even know. I'm going to say a film that made a really big impact on me was North by Northwest. that film made a huge impact on me just as an actor, looking at some scenes from it. I was like, and Rob made us watch Misery before we filmed this.
That makes perfect sense.
And I hadn't seen it, and I loved it.
Great movie.
Okay. Yeah. This is going to be a different question. One character you two could write a biography about.
Well, we've already written a biography script about a guy named Leighton Rees, who was the first world professional dart champion from Wales back in 1976. And it's you know, he's basically the Rocky of darts.
Wow.
And we've optioned it 3 different times, mm-hmm. and it just hasn't, you know, we feel like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the mountain, you know. It feels like it's going to happen, then it doesn't. It feels like it's going to happen, and then it doesn't. But that's funny you ask that, because we've already done that.
Well, perfect. Yeah. Your question, Camille, who would you like to play in a film?
Oh, who would I like to play in a film? Huh. Can I pause and think about it?
Yep, and I'll go to the last question, and then we'll be done, I promise. You guys do a lot of indie film. Give me some advice for people just getting into indie film, how to make one. What should they do? What should they learn?
I would say that if I had to say the mistake that I'll just cast the mistake on myself. I don't want to blame Chuck as well, but I think that I have been too unwilling to do things that don't look like a real movie, and, you know, ultra, ultra low budget, do-it-yourself type movies usually don't look like that, but they're probably the absolute best, you know, homeschooling or whatever you want to call it, teach yourself way to make movies. And, you know, I wish I had, I don't take photos very well. So I kind of automatically assume I can't use a film camera very well either. So I wish I had filmed stuff more before Alive. I wish I had done, you know, just grab the camera and like created something. But, you know, personally, I really feel like, oh, well, this has to look a certain way. And that's a stupid way to be, honestly. It just hamstrings you.
Chuck?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'd also just add, on a practical level, you know, you have to keep things contained. You have to keep things, you know, if you're shooting something indie, you can't really, I mean, you really do have to think about the budget, right? Because if you don't have the money, you can't. You know, you can't think, oh, we're gonna use special effects with that. You know, well, because they're expensive. You know, things are expensive, so you do have to think. You know, the more actors you have, the more catering you have, the more, you know, everything, right? And so, you know, lots of times, you know, really, you have your script should also, you know, it really has to have a story and really focus on. The actors, and just it doesn't have to be a studio thing, I guess what I'm trying to say, to make, you know, it just really has to have a good plot. I mean, I think that's ultimately what we liked about this, is that, you know, it's a good story, and it's not huge, it's not big, we're able to keep it self-contained, we have a very tight cast, and it works. So I guess that's about it.
Camille, what advice are you going to give indie people?
I'm gonna say that it's really helpful to kind of start from the beginning and not get ahead of yourself. It's easy to get like really stoked about projects and kind of spin out and like all these ideas of what you want to do. But if you keep your expectations and your plans manageable and realistic, then you're really working with something that you can do and that it is totally possible. And for acting, I'm going to say that you have to be willing to try a bunch of things, to work with your team, to trust the director, and to fall on your face a bunch of times, and that's awesome. To assimilate that is part of the journey of making films is the biggest lesson I've learned in the last, I don't know, 10 years almost of acting, is being willing to try things and not about getting an end product. It's really about, it sounds so cheesy, it's about the journey, but it is about your experience making it. I mean, this film's going to hold dear in my heart forever because of the experience making it. It was coming in last minute. Like, it was working with Rob, who I had met at the CFC already. It was collecting Tom and Angus as friends for the rest of my life. It was getting to work with you guys, who were so open to discussion and friendly and kind, and that was all part of it. And that's what I'm going to remember and really, like, cherish. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know if that's extremely cohesive, but there's a lot of parts in there.
It made sense.
It definitely is the journey, because where you start in the journey and where you end in the journey on not just one film, but in your career in film, you get so much better as you go, right? Like, yeah. Even just trying to make your days, the first day is always more hectic than, well, maybe not the last day, because the last day you're cramming everything in. But in between, you start to smooth things out and you get better at it. And, you know, so the same is with your skill level on acting and writing and production and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't. How are you guys? You haven't told me where to find your film, and I nor have I asked.
Oh, so right now we're exclusively on knotfest.com. We partnered with Slipknot and Clown. M. Sean Carhan, Reek scored the trailer as well as part of that, so you can get it on Slipknot on knotfest.com. We're also in select drive-ins, actually a couple of live theaters that are still open in the States, and a few virtual theaters. If you want to support your local theater in Knoxville, Tennessee, in Columbus, Ohio, Santa Ana, California, there's virtual theaters there that are running it. And then next week on the 18th, we will be out on pretty much every platform. iTunes, Amazon Prime, Fandango, help me out. Anybody, Voodoo, any other platform you can think of?
Voodoo, DirecTV,
yeah.
Verizon. That might just be in the Northeast. I'm not quite sure about that. But on all the, we'll be on all the major platforms. And then, and of course, you can go to Alive, the movie. So that's all together, .com. And that's our site. And then that will drive you to all these different locations as well.
Yep.
Well, and what about Canada, eh?
I've not used that word yet.
I think it'll be available on the 18th in Canada too, but I don't think they got any in person screenings in Canada.
No, it's Amazon.
You guys are in better shape than we are now.
We are.
Oh. We are drastically in better shape.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, everyone. Have a great day. Oh,
Simon, awesome. I have my answer.
Oh, I was going to let you go and let you not have one, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, you can use it or not, but I would like to do some kind of character that has heavy action and substance, so something like Alice in Resident Evil, those original ones. I would love to do some kind of version of that is really, really physical.
Well, they were,
she is badass.
Well, they were filmed in Toronto, and Mila Jovovich is probably getting a little bit old for the role. So the reboot, you might make it in.
There you go.
And she had a connection to Angus.
Hey.
Oh, that's right.
Thank you, everyone. Have a fabulous day, and hope your movie does great.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Glad we got to make it happen.